Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast, where we focus on how authors found success, looking at strategies that have taken them to the top of the bestseller charts, as well as what they've learned from their mistakes. Because being an indie author is more than knowing the latest marketing trend. It's about being innovative and creative and learning from your mistakes.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. I'm Sarah Rosette.
I'm Jamie Albright. And this week on the show we have
Tara from Kobo.
Yeah, and it was great. I learned a lot.
Yeah. She had some really good tips for if you're interested in being on Kobo and like increasing your sales on Kobo, but then also just advice for genre trends and like what's coming and just really good stuff. I thought I think it'd be helpful to anybody.
Yeah, it was great. And I mean, like I said, I learned a lot. There were just things I didn't know that Kobo could do, like libraries and I mean the library thing. Yeah, it was so great. But yeah, it was great. I think that everyone will love it. So what's been going on with you this week, Sarah?
Well, I'm working on some proofreading. I was just getting going on a book and then I had edits come back. So I've been doing edits and doing some tax stuff for end of year. And so, you know, kind of the, you know, maybe not so exciting stuff. So
yeah.
Anything super exciting.
The unglamorous part.
Yes. The, what is it, like categorizing expenses?
Woo-hoo, yeah.
That's so much fun.
That is sexy. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's like all I've got. What about you?
Not much. Just writing a little bit. It's hard to write, but I'm putting words on paper, and that's all good. I can say. So, yeah, I am running a branding special, just talking about branding for your book series, author name, I mean, you know, author persona, whatever. And that's for the month of December, and it's $125. And so if anybody's interested, they can email me, and we'll have my email in the show notes, or you can go to my website, jamiealbright.com, and contact me there. So, and so I've gotten some calls about that. That's been fun. And yeah, just doing my thing.
So I was thinking we should mention this time that you were on the Indie Author Podcast.
I was. And we talked about branding. Yeah. We did talk about branding. Yeah. And so it's something I'm really interested in and think that, you know, certainly could learn a lot more about, but I think that it's something I just, you know, there's just some things you understand. I do not understand algorithms or data, but there are other things I do understand. And so,
you have really good instincts when it comes like when people talk, like when we're talking with authors and somebody's like, this is what I'm working on. You can come up with very creative things that fit people's brands, even if it's not your brand or your genre.
Or my genre. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, if anybody's interested, give me a call give me an email, send me an email and we'll talk.
Yeah. And so since we mentioned Maddie's podcast, I was also going to mention another podcast that I found. It's called Afternoon of Delight, and it is about K-dramas. And it's
really,
it's a couple of writers that they watch K-dramas and then they talk about them like plotting, deep dives into like the All Is Lost moment. It's very interesting to hear other people. You know, I always love writing podcasts, so I thought I'd give them a shout out.
That's great. Awesome.
Yeah, they're lots of fun.
Very good.
Yeah, so we do have a new supporter.
Yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, we've got Christy Barth, and she picked the musical note. And thank you for that. We're so happy to have all the supporters that we do. And we just want to say thanks.
Yeah. And we did a supporter podcast that went out last week. A post about it in the group, correct?
Yes.
But tell people how they can find it otherwise.
Yeah. Because if you are a supporter, you should have received an email about getting your own private RSS feed. And so that's where you'll find the full episode. If you're a new supporter and you don't have that, just email Buzzsprout support, and I'll put that link in the show notes in case you're having trouble finding it. So that is how you get the private RSS feed. And if you want to support the podcast, then you'll have access to everything in that feed that we've done.
Yep.
So I think that is all we've got today.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to Tara because she was great.
All right. Here is Tara. Well, today we are really excited to talk to Tara Krimen. How are you, Tara?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. We've wanted to have you on for a while.
Yeah. Always happy to chat.
All right. Well, let me read your bio and then we'll jump into the questions. Tara is the director of Kobo Writing Life, Kobo's independent publishing platform. As a subject matter expert in all aspects of indie publishing with a decade of experience, she's dedicated to making KWL the greatest and most user-friendly self-publishing platform available. She leads a team of book lovers who are actively involved in the indie publishing community and always looking for ways to help authors reach a new audience of readers. So I certainly agree with that, that Kobo is like the best platform for ease of use for an indie author. It's so nice.
Yeah. I am not wide, so full disclosure, but I've always heard such great things about Kobo and how they deal with their authors. And I just think it's awesome. So tell us how you got started writing. I mean, not writing. Let me start again. So tell us how you got started working with writers.
Sure thing. And I'm just going to say apologies if my dog barks. He's starting and I'm trying to grab the mute as we go back and forth, but so apologies in advance. So I kind of started working with writers, I don't want to say accidentally, but it wasn't, I guess something I kind of fell into. My background is in literature and book selling. And I'm from Ireland originally, and which is why my accent is a little bit strange. I also grew up in England, and I've lived in Canada now for almost 12 years. Mm-hmm. So when I moved to Canada shortly afterwards, I joined Kobo. They kind of saw my resume and were like, you know, books and tech and like, you might be interested in this. And that was kind of the perfect job, really. I started on the customer care side, being the author support person, and then just kept getting called back and back, mm-hmm. and eventually switched areas where after a while of like just answering emails, I wanted to be able to solve some of the problems. So I moved onto the publisher operations side. Which was really like a learning about the publishing industry on the job, right? So learning all about Canadian publishing and publishing in general, mixed with this like a wealth of knowledge within the content team at Kobo. Mm-hmm. So that was like really, really beneficial. And then as kind of progressed in my career within Kobo, I sort of moved back to then the business side of Kobo Writing Life. So mm-hmm. I've always sort of worked on the indie piece, but in different areas, which I kind of think is good. I kind of understand, like, you know, what needs to go into the support, some of the technical back end aspects and things like that. But I kind of am lucky to have just found like a company that is full of similarly minded book people, you know, mm-hmm. And it really led me to working with authors. Like, we used to have authors that would come to the office and do chats on the stage. We called mm-hmm. them Koboing conversations, and KWL authors would come in from time to time as well. So I had never really been around writers in this sense in person. And I really enjoyed seeing that.
I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Kobo is a very book centered company. Like,
yes,
I love it. And you have a podcast for indie authors and you talk a lot to a lot of indie authors, right?
Mm-hmm. The Kobo Writing Life podcast. I jump in there from time to time, but Rachel and Laura, they're the main co-hosts. And the podcast is 10 years old now, which is mm-hmm. wild. We've had over 300 episodes. And we actually talk to a mix of indie and trad and hybrid, and try to focus on like the craft, and then also like the business of writing, because as we learn, as this changes and grows, that regardless of how you're publishing, you're still kind of marketing your books. So some of the same rules apply to everything, but it's been a lot of fun to be able to talk to authors, and especially in this industry as it changes so quickly. It's been fun to chat about the like whatever is the newest thing, you know?
Yeah. And you can tell on the podcast that y'all are book lovers, that you're interested in books and authors and reading. So I think that's
Yeah, I was just talking to Laura earlier about, she was saying the podcast is great to hit her reading goals, that she's trying to read 100 books this year.
Yeah.
So that's a lot. She's been using it for that as well. So
that's great. Yeah.
That's great. Well, do you have any aspirations to write?
So what my mom tells people that I am a writer, I'm like, that's not what I do. You don't really understand my job. No, like, no, I work with writers. I mean, maybe one day. I've tried Nano and failed a couple of times, which I kind of find quite humbling, because I understand how terrifying a blank page is. So I am always in awe of authors being able to sort of focus that time creatively and like put something out into the world. I think that's a real gift. I'm not quite sure I have it, but maybe one day. But yeah, I not right now.
That's funny.
Well, what do you wish authors knew about Kobo?
I mean, I guess we sort of touched on this a little bit, that just about how much it really is focused about like books. It literally is an anagram of the word book. And then working on Kobo Writing Life, I think, and in the indie industry in general, I think people don't maybe realize like how much fun it is, like, and how much we enjoy talking to authors and getting to have this face-to-face time. I think it's really rare in a job to get access to such a close-knit community. I always think that whenever I go to conferences or things like that, where it's a community where people are really genuinely sharing what works and trying to build one another up. Like, and for sure there is competition, but not in comparative industries in the tech world. You know, you don't see the same sort of thing, nor do you see as many women on the top, which I really appreciate, going to conferences and seeing so many women just leading the field. So I think, yeah, I think that's what I like about it.
Yeah, I love that last part for sure. You know, you don't see a lot of women at the top of a lot of industries, and
I know we got to change
self-publishing
that.
Is really and self-publishing is really one of those that does have a lot of women at the top. So I love that.
It's romance, usually. That's romance authors.
Go romance.
Majority of women, you know.
And romance leads the way in the changes. And like, it's so funny that, you know, I think it's changed a lot, but, you know, that old attitude where people would sort of turn their nose up about it. And I'm like, but you don't even realize that this is the genre and industry where people are trying things first. They're being super innovative. They know what works. And then people are replicating what they are doing, like even to the major publisher level, you know? So I think people really underestimate it. So I kind of like that aspect. And I love the DIY aspect of working with indies, because I mean, I'm a punk. That's my soul. You know, I love that that sort of like ethos in general, of like just do it yourself. And I really like that as well.
Yeah. Well, is there anything you wish you'd known about indie publishing or working with authors? We're kind of a quirky bunch.
I mean, I think working with authors, definitely a quirky bunch. It's very different to working with a like a customer facing field. I think it is a business to business, but on a grand scale, as like each author is their own business. So I kind of think that maybe that would have been helpful to learn. And also how introverted a lot of authors are. It took me a while to get used to that. You know, when I started going to conferences and talking to authors face to face, you kind of realize that some people aren't super comfortable with that. And for me, it's like I kind of thrive on genuine relationships and connections. Like, I mean, like I said, these are like business to business relationships, but mm-hmm. I think you really have to get an author, you have to get to know an author on a personal level and have an interest in their work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's even a shy author will open up to you about the book that they're writing. Right. So I think once I kind of realized that, that's always been helpful for me. The people are human, you know, we're sending emails or kind of working in this bigger community, but at the end of it, there's just sometimes a shy person that's trying to tell their story. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that I didn't realize at the beginning when I joined this industry.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of introverts in this business. So, but I love it when you're speaking with an introvert and you ask them about their book, you know, at a conference and they just, mm-hmm. like the switch just flips and they're yeah. all animated. I love that.
Yeah, or especially like if you remember something, yes. you know, like I like to ask where people are from because I'm genuinely really interested in like, yes. you know, what's your experience like? Where are you from? So I always find that that is something that surprises people when you mm-hmm. kind of remember notes like that. Mm-hmm. But then I think if another thing about like wishing I had known prior or something that I didn't know about the industry is how fast paced and quickly changing yeah. it is. Yeah. And I think it can be very easy to get, I mean, from our side, and I'm for sure from the author's side, to get caught up in always doing what the next person is doing or, mm-hmm. or like, okay, now this is the thing that we all have to do. And it can kind of be hard to narrow your focus. And I think that kind of comes with experience, but you know, you can step away and look at the industry as a whole mm-hmm. and see the trends within it, but you don't necessarily need to sort of focus, especially when we're developing our new tools. It's kind of, it's been a challenge to show internally kind of like, no, this is the thing that we should go after, while also having the kind of broader space, or kind of broader visual of the industry. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I would have told myself to maybe not get as swept away with all the new shiny. Like, I don't need to know everything about everything, you know, I can just keep a bigger eye.
Yeah, I have that problem too. Totally. Yeah.
Exactly. What do you see authors doing because they feel like they have to do it, but it's not really producing the results they want?
I think that's kind of a tricky question because it's so subjective to, you know, genre, author and everything. Yeah. But I think in general, like one of the things that I think does an author a disservice is if they're cycling in and out of Kindle Unlimited very quickly. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, there is the urge to see like immediate results on something. And right. I totally understand that. And you want to mm-hmm. get like the financial result for sure. But I think it's maybe confusing to the customer on both sides. So mm-hmm. I would say to sort of like choose and stick with it for at least 6 months, if not mm-hmm. a year. So like if that's going to be K, you do that. And that's what you're doing for this series or whatever. Or if mm-hmm. you're going to go wide, go the other way. I think sometimes we see, like I've just seen authors go in and out very quickly and it's probably creating a lot more work for you as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably the one thing that jumped out at me when I was kind of trying to think about this.
Right. What do you think the best thing an author can do to set themselves up for success if they're leaving KU and going wide?
I would definitely, like, before you even leave, familiarize yourself with some of the websites, decide which ones you're going to publish on, mm-hmm. because you don't want to have left and then all of a sudden you have a week of learning all of these new tools everything has its own quirks and knacks. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we hear that ours is pretty good, but, you know, hopefully like our aim is to the publishing should not be a problem. You should be promoting your books. But so I would take some time, like create those accounts, get everything set up well ahead of when you're going out. Mm-hmm. And then treat your books like it's a brand new release because these are brand new books to the wide audience. Which I think is something that authors maybe overlook. They kind of just put them out there and they're like, okay, yeah, these books are here now. Mm-hmm. But no, this is a brand new audience. So I would treat it like a new release, you know, create pre-orders, try and generate buzz, reach out to the retailers, like my team, you know, if you're coming wide for the first time, we have those terribly kept secret additions to our stuff where we have a promotions tool, but you have to ask us for it. You can publish audiobooks, but you have to ask us. So I would start building those relationships again prior to you leaving and setting stuff up. And then I think you're kind of creating, you're just setting yourself up for a better success than just ending and kind of quickly throwing things up without being a bit thoughtful about it.
Right. Okay. That's a great answer.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. And each platform is a little different and it does take a little while to figure everything out. And that was the thing that I've noticed is like with Kobo and some of the other retailers that are not Amazon, there are people that you can talk to and they will, and you do get an answer from a human. And so it feels weird at first to reach out sometimes, but you guys want authors to talk to you, right? You want them to
totally
email questions.
Especially if like, if you've had success in KU and you're new to Kobo, that's great for us to know because like to us, it looks just like a new account, you know? So it helps us to know, okay, right. You have an audience there. Like, how do we now find you this audience? So I think that's really good to let us know. And also I would say if you have time, I know it's a lot of time, but depending on what's your primary reading, like, service. So maybe test out some of the other ones. Like you can download the Kobo apps for free, have a browse around what the store looks like even. So you're kind of seeing it from a customer perspective. And I'm sure you can do the same with like the Google Play Books and Apple and all of that. Just have a little browse. You don't need to be purchasing on everything, but I think just seeing what they look like might be helpful. I know that the comparative authors are different on different platforms, right? So like the also bots are not always the same. So it might be good to see kind of like, okay, that book. So I should use this category on Barnes and Noble and I should use this on Kobo and even for pricing as well, it might be helpful.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, very good. Advice. Yeah. And as a KU author, what are these humans you speak of?
We're <I'm> real people.
Oh my gosh. Well, moving on. Yes.
We've already touched on a couple on this a little bit, but are there any other common mistakes that you see that you would advise people things to watch out for?
I think the other thing that we see sometimes when people are kind of new to Kobo is kind of underestimating the global reach that we have. So for instance, if you're based in the US, USD is going to be your primary currency. So some authors would just set that and then kind of leave it be without optimizing your currency in the other currencies. And unfortunately, our system could do this a bit better. I would love if it automatically did this for you. But for instance, if you're setting your book as $4.99 in the US, that might be like $5.73 in Canada. And you should maybe be rounding that up. So because we're kind of taught to respond well to the 99 cent price point. And you can earn a little bit more on every sale. But also you're probably going to make more sales in Canada on Kobo than you are in the US. It's our home market. So I would definitely say that to not underestimate those different territories and to not have the same expectations of where your books will sell because we see people selling all over the place. So I would definitely optimize those currencies I think on the other thing as well is just to kind of market to the wide audience too, to let people know your books are on Kobo. I think that's always really, really helpful. And to take advantage of Kobo Plus, which is Kobo's subscription program. It's non-exclusive. So maybe if you're coming from KU and you're not too sure what it is, it might be like, you're like, I don't want to put my book into another subscription program and be tied in. But there's no time limit or anything. You can test it out. You can remove your book at any time. You can even choose the territories that you're going to put your book into. So I would definitely kind of take advantage of all the kind of additional distribution options that we have for stuff like this, because the subscription reader is definitely voracious. But we believe that non-exclusively, it just sort of, it helps everyone else rise up.
Very good. Very good. Well, what are, I mean, do you see commonalities in writers who have been successful over the long haul?
It's been interesting to see the ones that have kind of stayed and, you know, ones that I would have been talking to 10 years ago that are still finding success. I love seeing that. And I think the main thing is really being consistent with your releasing and how you're talking to your audience. And for sure, you see authors taking time off or things like that, but having clear communication. So I think consistency in how you're releasing and how you're publishing, it doesn't mean that you have to release a book every month. You could be an author that releases one book a year. Mm-hmm. You could do four books a year, but it's just making sure that you're setting those books on the same sort of timeline. So your authors know when to expect it. Mm-hmm. At Kobo, we don't penalize you if you shift your pre-order date. You definitely can do that. You can set a pre-order as far ahead as you like, but we kind of recommend you to set something realistic so you're not disappointing any customers. But I think in terms of pre-orders, you want to just like ensure that you're fulfilling them kind of regularly so authors know or customers know what to expect from you. So I think consistency is probably really key when you're trying to be long-term like that. You want to hook those readers so they'll keep coming back. But if you're being a bit flaky or if your release schedule is kind of a little all over the place, it might be harder, I think.
Yeah. You don't want to confuse people and you don't want people to wonder if you're still writing.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, since you work with such a wide range of authors and genres, what trends do you see or, you know, what do you see going on right now that's kind of interesting or popular to you?
I feel like audio is the buzz at the moment for everything. You can publish audiobooks directly with KWL and KWL, we just shorten it to call it that for Kobo Writing Life. You can opt your audiobooks into Kobo Plus as well. Part of the way that we do Kobo Plus for the subscription program is calculating by minutes read rather than pages read, which lets us treat ebooks and audiobooks exactly the same. So I think if you're that seems to be the trend of books going in. So if you're kind of curious about audio, I know that Google have the free tools that you can use. We actually accept those. So you can publish those through Kobo Writing Life and opt those into Kobo Plus as well. We would just say that you're very clear on that this is an AI narrated audiobook. Again, just to temper customer expectations. I think that seems to be where a lot of people are kind of talking about at the moment, especially as more and more players enter the game. And I think competition is good and healthy. So it's something that is kind of what we're interested in. And then in terms of genres, romance is always king. And just something that I was noticing with covers, I guess, for non-romance, but even for like thrillers or mysteries and things like that, you know, that kind of like animated, like not cartoon, but like an animated cover that almost would look like a rom-com, like solely they used to be just for rom-coms.
Yes.
Seeing those expanding into other genres, which has been really interesting. So you can kind of see like a romantic suspense in that sort of area. So that jumped out at me as something that was sort of new and I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. And it's funny because I write mysteries, cozies and historicals, and cozy has always, or not always, but has had a lot of those kind of vector type covers that are very bright and have the illustrations on them. So in some like amateur sleuth categories, that's kind of moving away from that. I don't know, the Richard Osman covers that are very text prominent, you know, with maybe one graphic and like a single background. So I think cozies are kind of going maybe a different way. So that's
it's funny because you could maybe follow the trend of it moving from that into like thrillers then perhaps. Yeah. Like it's kind of funny. And I have noticed a little bit of a resurgence of like the object book on romance covers as well.
Yeah.
But I think things are quite cyclical. What I would say for covers that I think really work for box sets, because box sets do really well on Kobo. We don't have a higher price cap, so you can publish a box set for over $9.99 and earn 70% on every sale. And because of that, we see people doing like super duper box sets where it's like 12 book bundle and you're kind of pricing it at its value. But so it's been really interesting to see kind of what people do with the covers, because we don't restrict the 3D box set covers. I think there are some that don't like some platforms that don't like that. Mm-hmm. But if you just have a plain white background on it, it really makes your book quite small, mm-hmm. teeny tiny, right? So if you're applying for promotions, you're probably less likely to get picked because the space is just a bit smaller. Mm-hmm. So it's been interesting to see how authors use the space, because I almost think of box sets, they're almost like an ad for that series. Like, mm-hmm. so what would your Facebook ad be? Like, how would you put that? And could you have that as a box set? So it could be like one image cover, just an image with it saying it's a box set. You could have mm-hmm. the 3D with different kind of colored images and it like just colors in the background. So it's been mm-hmm. sort of fun to see what authors are doing to make their box sets a little bit more appealing while making it appear to be part of that series, you know? So I feel like that's a challenge. Like,
yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. It is. Yeah. Like the image in the background with maybe the smaller versions of the covers or exactly. a list of the titles. Yeah, I've seen yes. that too. Yeah. And it does build a space much better. Mm-hmm. It doesn't give all that little white, all the white space around the little tiny 3D.
Right, right. I love that you don't put a cap on the box sets, but I mean, that's always been your policy. And I love that. I think that's great. That is very painful. With the KU box set, yeah.
And with the Kobo Plus, what I've noticed when I'm kind of looking at the books that are being read, box sets kind of float to the top as well, which, I mean, mm-hmm. obviously they are longer, so therefore they're probably at the top. But it's been really interesting to see how, like, because in theory, a customer could pick all of the books, but they like it as a place mm-hmm. to have all of the series in one place and read mm-hmm. that box set through. So that's been something that's interesting on Kobo Plus. And also, it's been a real area where backlist content is sort of getting read. Mm. So it's not always frontlist that are like the top books when I'll kind of go through and look at, you know, mm-hmm. what are people reading in Kobo Plus in the US? Right. It's been interesting to see and be like, oh, these books are from like 2017. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been kind of interesting to see that as an avenue for discovery.
Yeah, that's great. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it is. How have you seen indie publishing change over the last few years?
Oh, so much. I mean, I think we talked about how quick it changes.
Yes.
But I think just like the formats, you know, right. back in the day, you had a Word doc, you uploaded it, and that's all right. you needed to worry about. Right. You know, now it is everything. It's the Kobo Plus. It's mm-hmm. the different distribution. It's, do you have audiobooks? Are right. you sending books to libraries? Mm-hmm. You know, if you have audio, are you human narrating and AI narrating? Are you mm-hmm. doing a bit of everything? So I feel like it's authors have to make even more or have to wear even more hats than they had previously around all of the different formats. And then I think, I guess the biggest change as well is just more books, you know, so it is a lot harder for books to stand out. I feel like at the, probably 10 years ago when yeah. Kobo Writing Life was launched, there were fewer. So even your ads, you probably earned way better on your ads mm-hmm. than you would have. Nowadays, it is a little bit harder. But that's why I think it's really important to build the relationships and take advantage of the opportunities that different retailers have. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a promotions tool where we kind of allow just Kobo Writing Life authors to apply for different promo features. Mm-hmm. And we just launched Kobo Plus. So we're kind of, you can apply to be kind of featured in a Kobo Plus carousel that goes right to subscribers and will be updated on a weekly basis. So
wow.
as the industry has changed, we're trying to pivot how we can still assist authors at the same time.
That's great. Yeah. Yeah. We need all the help we can get.
Please continue. We're so interested. So I wanted to ask, since you mentioned libraries, let's talk about that for a little bit, because people can upload their books to Kobo Writing Life and then get into library distribution through Kobo, right?
Yeah, we can distribute to Overdrive. So they're a former sister company of ours. And we have that kind of different relationship with them. So you can, it's super easy. It's just in the process when you're publishing a book, where all you have to do is enter a library price that's in USD, and then that gets distributed to Overdrive, and you earn 50% of that sale. So I think it's kind of like the highest rate around. It's,
wow.
it's like equivalent of going mm-hmm. direct with them, and it's super easy. And we've only seen the library sales increase. I mean, there was a huge pickup in early pandemic. I hate mentioning the pandemic. Sorry for bringing that word up. But it's continued to grow each year, which has been really encouraging. So I think it's a really good marketing tool for authors as well. I'm sure you guys get people saying, you know, look, I can't afford to buy your book. They can go and ask their library for it. And all of Kobo e-reading devices have OverDrive integration. So all they need to do is put their library number in or create an account, and you can be borrowing right from your Kobo e-reader.
Yeah, that's nice. That's great.
Wow. That is so convenient and really nice.
Yeah. Well, we talked a little bit about trends. Do you have anything else that you see on the horizon, like maybe the next couple of years, that you think is going to impact indie authors?
I would love to see like non-exclusive subscriptions becoming the norm. You know, that would be my dream world, where we're kind of not restricting authors. Our ethos has always been that we want to help you get your books in front of as many readers as possible, however they want to read them. So I would hope that that would become a trend that we see. And I think more audio platforms, like, so as we're seeing this kind of open up, I think there's, I mean, audiobooks to a longstanding indie author, right? There's something you've always done. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's probably an audience that hasn't even considered them yet. Mm-hmm. So that'll be super interesting to see that maybe shift in popularity. And then just in general, I think more and more people will start reading digitally for the first time. You know, it's a growing audience. There's like places, you know, globally where people haven't done that yet. So I think more and more people might be kind of making the switch over. So yeah, I think maybe it's, I don't have, I wish I had a more fun prediction per se, but I just see more and more people, more and more books being in the world and more readers being around.
That's great. Yeah. And y'all continue to expand Kobo Plus, right? It seems like it started out slowly and now it seems like the pace is really picking up, right? So yeah, it's going into lots of countries, right?
It's in 14 countries right now. Wow. Yeah. So it launched in just the, in Belgium and the Netherlands back in 2017. And we've been kind of rolling it out more and more. We launched in 6 countries this year. So, the US and the UK, we launched in April. And then just last month, we launched in Sweden, Finland, Denmark, and Norway. So those Nordic countries. You can expect to sort of see more areas. I can't quite say where. But yes, we'll continue to expand this as it kind of makes sense to our global sales strategy that we've always had at Kobo.
Yeah. Right. Well, so for the listeners who don't know what Kobo Plus is, explain to them what it is and how you feel like it can really help authors and readers.
Sure. So it's basically a subscription and all you can read program. So if you're based in the US, as a customer, you have the option of paying $7.99 a month for all you can read, $7.99 a month for all you can listen, or you could do the combined all you can read and listen for $9.99 a month. Wow. So it's a really great opportunity for you to just read as many books as you would like. I think it's like pretty good pricing wise. And then from the author perspective, so you can opt your books in very easily on the Kobo Writing Life dashboard. We tried to build it out, giving authors as much control as possible. So like I said, it's non-exclusive. There's no required period for your books to be in. You can select the country. So perhaps you don't want to put your new release in Canada. You can choose that. You can choose the other areas, or you can opt in. My recommendation is if you're publishing widely and globally, then I would just opt them into all areas. And it's a revenue share model. So it's very similar to how all of the subscription models work, with that main difference being that we calculate the minutes read. And the feedback that we've been getting is just that it has increased author revenue overall. Like I was saying, it's a great source of people finding backlist content. And something that's a little bit different is that you'll even get paid for rereads. So if a book is being read by one of those super fans, you'll get paid for the amount of time somebody is spending on your book.
Wow, that's amazing. I did not know that. So thank you for sharing that.
No problem.
Yeah. And I can attest to the sales, the earnings going up with Kobo Plus, because I put mine in pretty early on. I can't remember if it was just when you first launched or like phase two or whatever, but I have seen an increase in the Kobo Plus versus just sales. And so, I mean, that's very exciting to me as as a wide author, because I always want to find, you know, new ways to bring in new income. So I think that's great. Really happy.
Yeah, we have the reporting on the Kobo Writing Life dashboard now. We just added that recently to have the Kobo Plus stats available there, because that was becoming a common email that we would get where somebody would be like, you've paid me too much. And we're like, no, it's your subscription money. Like, you just haven't checked.
That's funny.
Which is, I don't know if I'd make that call.
Yeah, I don't know. You'd
be like, it's so kind of those people to, I wouldn't email and say anything, but very kind.
Well, yeah. I have a question since I'm not in Kobo. So you said something about like audio and some of your promos, you have to ask about those to be, why is that? That you just don't have that as something that's available to everybody?
It's a bit of a just a way of streamlining the operations, but also because, so the promotions, for instance, is primarily, I mean, it is right now actually all English language, but we have authors all over the world. So it really is to just sort of make the promotions available to only those who can kind of benefit from them. So for instance, if you're in France with a bunch of French books, you're probably not going to put your book into a promo of just English content, so that's kind of the reason. I know I would love to automate it a bit more where it's like, if we know you're based here, that you just see these things. But yeah, it's mostly just to streamline it, so it's a bit more manageable on our end. But once we enable them for you, then they just sort of stay there and you don't have to worry about it.
Okay Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, we always like to ask everybody, what's the best thing you think you've done to set yourself up for success?
Ooh, that's a hard question. I think not being afraid to ask questions. Like as I mentioned, I've sort of shifted a couple of different positions throughout Kobo, and I always kind of look at it as like, I love to learn, right? So it's not being afraid to like learn new things or not know something. So I think to be successful, you have to be willing to admit when you don't know things, and there's nothing wrong with that. Everyone starts at some point. So I think not being afraid to ask questions and always having having a capacity to learn new things is probably really important.
Okay. I love that.
Yeah.
That's a great answer. Yeah.
All right. Phew.
Check. Yeah. We can air it now. That was good. No, it was a great answer. Well, we appreciate you being here so much. I guess what we would want to know is, how can people find out more about Kobo or get their books into Kobo if they're interested?
Yeah, so you can go to kobo.com/writinglife. That's the website where you can sign up and make an account. We have the Kobo Writing Life podcast. We're on all, actually, I shouldn't say all the socials. We're not on TikTok because we don't have the capacity to take on another thing. But you can follow us on like Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. If you search Kobo Writing Life, you'll find us there. Yeah. And if you have any questions or anything, you can email writinglife@kobo.com. And a top tip, if you wanted a question to come to me directly, just put Tara somewhere in the email and I'll get that. If there's anything that you wanted to ask me directly, I'm happy to answer as well.
Perfect. That's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you for talking to us today. This has been really, really good and informative. I think you've given some great tips for people to think about, you know, specifically for Kobo, but then also for every, like, their publishing in, you know, on different platforms too. So I think it'll be helpful.
That's great. Well, thanks everybody for listening today. You can support the podcast at wishidknownthemforwriters.com/support. And you can find the show notes at wishidknownthemforwriters.com. Thanks to Alexa Larberg for editing and producing the podcast, and for Adriel Wiggins for being our faithful PA and doing all our admin. And we'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. We hope this episode inspired you, empowered you, and made you laugh a little bit too. If you loved it, tell your friends about it. And if you feel so inclined, leave us a review. We look forward to being with you again next week.